It's time for everyone's favorite podcast on the web. Pivot off the wall. Where you get the best sports talk and info in New York.
You lollygag the ball around the infield. You lollygag your way down to first. You lollygag in and out of the dugout. You know what that makes you, Larry?
Lollygag.
Lollygaggers. What's our record, Larry?
8-16.
8-16. How'd we ever win 8?
It's a miracle.
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
It's an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. And here's your host, Chris Sheeran.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back once again to another Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. Chris Sheeran, Joe Auriemma, and we are joined today by the New York Post's Kevin Kernan. Kevin, welcome back to the Off the Wall podcast.
Always great to be back to the podcast. Love the pod.
Well, it's always great to have you here. And Kevin, if you don't know, which you should know if you're, you know, in tune with any sports in the New York area and where our reporters are covering certain things. Kevin is in San Francisco covering the Giants and Phillies series, which, you know, a lot of people thought the Giants would be done in five games, and now it's pretty much the exact opposite, Kevin.
Yeah, it's really been a great series, and because of the Yankees, no one knows about this series. But every game's been super exciting, great pitching, very good defense, seen some great young players. I'll just throw one thing at you, Chris. 1954 was the last time the Giants won the World Series. Of course, they were the New York Giants back then, and a guy named Willie Mays played center field. He was 23 years old, and I'm not saying they're going to win the World Series, but they have a great young player in Buster Posey, who was 23 years old. And he got four hits last night, kind of made a great play at home on a tag. So I think, at the very least, the Giants are doing better than what anybody expected. But I've known Bruce Bochy for many years and Brian Sabian. They're great baseball guys, and they're not moneyball guys. And they got a team. They got a team of overachievers, and it's a lot of fun to watch.
There's a lot of electricity, Kevin. It just seems like, now I don't want to, you know, be the guy that comes out and there's magic and there's wonder and there's an aura and a mystique about, you know, a baseball season, but from watching the past couple of Giant Phillies games, it just seems like there's that, you know, that moxie, that juice, that extra something that has the Giants maybe set for a storybook ending here.
It really does. And, you know, I picked up on it early. Once you saw Lincecum pitch the way he did, and they're getting great, you know, they're getting great at bats. You know, Aubrey Huff had some really good at bats last night. And they're doing little things to push guys along. And Bochy, to me, is the best manager in the game.
Wow.
I really think Girardi could learn a lot from him and how he goes sometimes, but by his gut instinct. So I'll give you a couple examples.
Okay.
Last night he pulled and they don't always work. That's the point I want to make, but it's the right move. Last night with 4 2/3, he pulled out his starter and went to his bullpen, and it didn't work out, but that was definitely the right move to make there. He's been juggling his lineup. Obviously, Cody Ross has been an amazing story. Last night he put Sandoval in for the first time after not playing for five straight games, not starting. And he got a big, big two-out double. Actually, he did it twice because the umpires messed up the call. And, you know, so he's really rode his gut on certain guys and how to play him and where to play him. Uribe obviously came in last night with the bad wrist, got the sacrifice slider, won the game. To have that team win and take a 3-1 lead, you got to make about 30 moves that work out your way. You know, and he's done just that. A couple haven't, but he's really managed, and I think that gets lost all the time. And the other point I want to make, too, is that the Giants, and Yankee fans should be able to relate to this, the Giants are really a bunch of old Yankees. I mean, Brian Sabian worked in the Yankee front office, their GM. Obviously, Dave Righetti saw Bybal Balboni the other day. He's one of their top scouts. They have a lot of people that work for the Yankees. And they've kind of brought over a little bit of a Yankee influence to the West Coast.
Absolutely. And, Kevin, you know, with me, with managers, I just like the gut feeling, as you said. I mean, sometimes it doesn't work out. But Joe and I were talking about this series before it started, and the Phillies line up like an American League team in the National League, but they have been known during this season to go into an offensive funk. Now, they are scoring runs, but the Giants, who really weren't scoring runs down the stretch, and even in their first round against the Braves, are starting to put a little offense together.
Yeah, that's a great point. And the Phillies really, their offense, I talked to one of their chief scouts the other day, and their offense has not come together, hasn't really been together all year. I think we're kind of in that mirage area where, you look at all the names and you know they're good players and you think they're producing a lot more than they have, and they really haven't. And now the Giants, if they can score runs with that pitching staff and the toughness in the bullpen and the way Bochy uses his bullpen, I mean, a lot of guys were screaming in the press box, because in the Giants press box, you get a lot of radio, TV, local writers who are kind of like fans. I heard him yelling behind me, why doesn't he use Wilson for a two-inning save, and this and that and all this stuff. But he played it the way he wanted to play it. And how about this for a number? Last night, the Giants scored more than four runs for the first time since September 25th, I believe.
Wow.
So if that's not managing, I don't know what is.
And they're a game away from going to the World Series. So
Absolutely. Just
to put that into perspective, just a couple more for me before I hand it off to my buddy Joe. And the first one is, Roy Oswalt came in last night, and there's a lot of people, I don't want to say everybody, but there's a lot of people on Twitter, on the internet. I saw on one site it said panic attack. Listen, Charlie Manuel has taken the Philadelphia Phillies, and this is just my opinion, to two consecutive World Series. It was a throw day for Oswalt, and who knows their personnel better than the manager of the team? So I saw nothing wrong with Oswalt. I don't know how long he was going to have him out there. Now, he is your Game 6 starter, but I saw nothing wrong. If he was ready to go, and he's an arm that you trust, to bring him into a game to try to keep it tied and to try to get it into extra innings. What were your thoughts on that, Kevin?
Yeah, I didn't have a problem when it happened. And Huff hit a really good pitch. I think he made one bad pitch to Posey that kind of got it up there. But I think he rolled the dice. Charlie's been rolling the dice. He knows what he has to do with this team. And I like when you bring in a guy like that, because if you get a good clean inning there out of him, you're going to think that once you get through Wilson, you might get something done against the Giants. So Charlie, I think Charlie's best comment of the whole series was, of course of their lack of hitting and stuff and things like that. You're kind of on your own when you leave the dugout. And I think that's so true. And so many, we're in an age where everybody's a second guesser, everybody's a sports columnist, everybody's a blogger. Everybody's got something to say without being here. And I want to emphasize, that's the big difference. And to me, that's why newspapers are still so important, because the guys are out here. We're at the games. We got to feel. We may not always be right, but at least we're doing our homework, and we're not just sitting there watching it on TV and making an opinion or drawing up a stat. Like, one thing I got to mention, I got to get off my chest, like the idiotic stat that came up early in this series by the guy that everybody bows down to. I don't even want to mention his name, but he works for the Red Sox, and he's a statistician.
Okay. I think I can figure it out.
And he came up with the idiotic stat, some kind of group of numbers, that Tim Lincecum's 14 strikeout, two-hit performance was better than Roy
Halladay. Oh, I heard that. I heard that, better than the no-hitter.
When you start running stats out like this, I mean, to me, you've lost all touch with reality, and all the cult following, they jump on it. Meanwhile, just step back and look at that for one second, Chris. The number five hitter for the Braves that day was Alex Gonzalez, all right? So even though I'm not taking nothing away from Lincecum, he pitched a great game that day, and he may be better than Halladay. I'm not saying he's not. But in that, there's no way a two-hitter is better than a no-hitter against like the Braves.
Which was a walk away from a perfect game, by the way.
Yes.
Let's not forget that.
A ball away.
Yeah,
maybe,
pitch away from a perfect game.
So where we are now, and that's why I love doing your guys' show, is because there's a sense of reality to it.
Well,
And I don't do many shows because some of these people I don't want to deal with. But where we are now with the way people are viewing the game, I'm telling you right now, there's a lot of idiotic guys who could be GMs, because there's a lot of idiotic GMs out there, and they think the same way as a lot of these people do.
Well, let me just follow up on that before I get to my last question on this series. And, I'm from an old-school baseball household. That's where it started with me. My father played semi-pro, and he's an old-school baseball thinker. You know what? take your abacus and throw it in the closet. I don't want to hear about sabermetrician. I don't want to hear about these numbers and that numbers because, you know, Colby Lewis, just to transfer series for 1 second before Joe takes over, has a 1.69 ERA in the postseason. But he has a, you know, near 7 ERA against the Yankees in his career. You know what that means to me, Kevin? Nothing. Game 6 means everything. And when both pitchers, Hughes and Lewis, take to the hill, we'll see what happens. Maybe one of them has a bellyache that day and they don't pitch well. Does that, you know, does the 1.69 ERA come in there? That's why, you know, these numbers to an extent have a little bit to do with what's going on. But it's the day of that game specifically that, to me, says what's going to happen in that game. Now, before we move on to the Yankees series, let me ask you one more question about this series. People shouldn't be dunning the Phillies right now.
Right.
In no way, shape, or form. They have Halladay going today. We just talked about it. He threw a no-hitter, which was worse than Lincecum's 14-strikeout, you know, two-hit performance. But anyway, having said that, if they get a win today, it's 3-2. It's also what's going on with the Yankees, but the difference is the Phillies go home to that bandbox of a ballpark where anything could happen, granted with either offense, but I think the home field advantage comes back into play for Philly with Oswalt and Hamels going 6-7, even though Oswalt threw that inning last night. I just think the Phillies are not done yet.
No, I agree. I think if the Giants don't win it tonight, I don't think they're going to win it, to be quite honest. I think you hit some great points, and that ballpark makes a huge difference. It's like too, and even sports writers were guilty of this. In the first game when Lincecum and Halladay matched up, there were people saying, well, it didn't really shape up to what it was supposed to be. I'm telling you, I watched every pitch of that game. Those guys both pitched a great game. Now, I think it was 4-3. There were a couple first and second row home runs in that place. Those things happen. But with Lincecum here, this whole town loves this kid. The way things are going for the Giants, I think they really need to get it together today and win this game because it goes back to Philly. You know Oswalt's going to pitch well. And Cole Hamels pitched a heck of a game. I've known him since Little League when we were out in San Diego together. Him and my son were in the same Little League. And, you know, he's going to come back strong. And you always have that question about the Giants. How are they going to score runs? So I'm talking about bold predictions. I could see the Giants winning tonight. And then I could see the Yankees getting through Texas and sweeping the Giants. That's what I could see.
You know, Kevin, it's Joe Auriemma, and I actually was going to say the same thing. That's the same scenario I could actually see happening. I could see the Giants winning tonight, and I could see the Yankees just kind of rolling right through Texas into San Francisco. But I want to switch over to the Yankee series real quick. And the funny thing is I actually heard a couple of people, I'm not going to name names, say that Cliff Lee's performance against the Yankees was actually the best performance of the postseason. And I just nodded my head and said, first of all, Lincecum and Roy Halladay both had great performances, and Halladay's is the best one that, you know, any baseball fan has seen since 1956. So I don't know what's going on here. I don't know why these people are writing this.
Well, I think they're just doing it because they want to reinvent the wheel. And Lee did have a great. You know, the thing I love most about Lee's performance in that game was not a pitch, but when he came out when he first came out to the mound. He had more rosin on his hat than you know. He looked like he rolled it in rosin, and obviously he's playing head games with the Yankees hitters and everyone else. So he will take every advantage mentally that he can get, and he'll beat you on it. But he also, let's face it, how long can he throw those pitches like he pitches them, and the Yankees don't really have a better game plan against them? I think the Yankees, we've seen through the years, when they see a guy a second time in a series, they're much more, you know, they're much more comfortable against them. And I also think that I don't know how serious the injury is because I'm not out there. But if the Rangers lose Nelson Cruz, to me that's a huge blow to their offense because they need everything going too. And this series is it could definitely go either way because the Yankees are in that desperate area where teams get where they basically say, well, we can't do any worse than we've done. Let's just go out there and have fun and play ball. And if Phil Hughes gives them a game. That's the big question mark to me. Can Phil really step it up? If Phil Hughes gives him a game, I think you're going to see a game 7.
And you know, Kevin, that's the difference between the Yankees and the Rangers. You mentioned Nelson Cruz with his injury comes out in the fifth inning last night. And, You know, Mark Teixeira is now out 6 to 8 weeks, but the Yankees have the depth where they can just, you know, go right to Lance Berkman, who's a hot hitter right now, and he's played first base up until he, you know, got traded to the Yankees. He was the Astros' first baseman. So that's the difference between the two ball clubs.
Well, and the Yankees have that advantage because they have the big payroll and they can fill in all those spots.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, you know, I made that point today on Twitter about Willie Mays being 23 and Posey being 23. And it's just kind of a cute little thing. I'm not saying that the Giants certainly winning the World Series.
Right.
So of course, one guy wrote back, well, you can make anything with numbers. You know, Mantle was 30 when he won his last World Series, and CC's 30 now, you know. And, mm-hmm. and my reaction to that was, well, yeah, you're right. You can do anything with numbers. And the Giants have a $96 million payroll, and the Yankees have a $200-plus million payroll.
Yeah.
So when you have that kind of payroll, you have that kind of depth. And
right.
As long as you make the right choices, and that quite frankly, is why the Yankees, you know, have been able to do what they've done through the years and why they can also do well in the World Series for the most part, because they, you know, they usually have that DH advantage because they have a much better player in that role than the National League clubs do. But at the same time, when you get an injury like Teixeira,
mm-hmm.
I think you really see the mental toughness of the Yankees. And I don't want to just say the Yankees are just numbers and money, and that's why, because they do have some guys. They've taken their money and spent it wisely on players who want to play in big situations.
Right.
And it doesn't matter what they're getting paid. So I think the Yankees, I think it was so fitting. I think last time you guys had me on, we talked a little bit about Posada. And I said, don't give up on this guy because, you know, what he's made of. And you know, he had a big game the other day.
Yeah.
The Yankees have some guys that are going to take you home.
No, and I agree with that. It's very hard with the grit and the determination of a championship-caliber ball club. It's hard to put a team away when they're against the ropes. And the Yankees are in that predicament right now. You know, the first four games of the series, they looked, you know, other than that eighth inning, in game one, they looked completely dead offensively. The bullpen was certainly shaky games two through four. But then the Yankees come back in game five, and the offense is clicking. Everything seems to be going, you know, their way. And again, I made this point last night. They saw C.J. Wilson the first time, and they didn't figure him out. Now they have a chance to see Colby Lewis for a second time. They figured out C.J. Wilson this second time around, and I think that's what's the difference between the Yankees lineup and other lineups, because they're going to go back. Kevin Long's going to work with these guys. They're going to see what they did wrong the first time around, and now this second time, I think they're going to get to Colby Lewis.
Yeah, they got a much better game plan. The one thing I would say about Colby Lewis is, you know, I had the Rays and the Rangers in the first round, and I remember talking to him, and you know, somebody asked him about pressure, and he said, you know what, pressure is taking your family to Japan to hang on in baseball.
Absolutely.
And that's what I had to do. So I think Colby Lewis will be up for the task as well. I think it's the time of year, we're getting great games, and for a team to win, they have to beat the other team. And that's
right.
What's going to happen to the Rangers. They're going to have to beat the Yankees, just like the Giants stepped it up last night after the Phils tied the score. They came back and scored a run and beat the other team. Teams are not going to give it away at this point. You're not going to see any Met-like performances here,
right.
You know, giving it away. This is where, you know, the best players, you know, or the best day, and you never know. Over here with Cody Ross, you know, maybe the Yankees will get a huge performance from someone we're really not expecting it from. And like a Brett Gardner.
Right.
I want to make this point about Gardner, too. Talking to scouts, they just love this kid. I love the kid, too. I think he does so much for the Yankees offense. And I'd love to see them start. And as much as the Jeter people are going to hate me, but I'd love to see him start batting leadoff for the Yankees. But he does give you so much when they bat him lower in the order. So Colby Lewis is going to have to really pitch a great game to beat the Yankees tonight.
That's a great point, because even in the game against Cliff Lee, Brett Gardner, you know, he gets on base, and he's aggressive enough where he can steal second base, and it puts the Yankees at least in a situation where, you know, Cliff Lee is pitching lights out, but he's the only one that got to third base all night because of his aggressive nature on the base path. So that's a great point, Kevin. I only have one more question for you. The next two games, you know, the one thing the Rangers can say is that they have Cliff Lee in their back pocket for a game seven, and he seems to be in the Yankees' heads. You know, I know we take it one game at a time, but if a scenario comes up where the Yankees get through a game six and they have to pitch a game seven, how do you see that playing out?
Well, you know, that's to me, that's one of those games where, you know, everybody's on board. You know, everybody's available to pitch. Everybody's available to do something great. I think a game seven against Cliff Lee is going to be a fantastic game. And I think in the end, I think the Yankees will have enough to get by Cliff Lee. Mm-hmm. I will say this. If Cliff Lee beats the Yankees again, then you know, I never thought I'd see another Sandy Koufax-like performance. I was kind of young when Sandy did that, but that's what we're looking at.
Yeah.
And you know, we're supposed to have answers. That's the great thing about your question there. I don't have an answer to that one.
Right.
I don't know what's going to happen. All I know is I'm going to enjoy it, and it's going to be fun, and then you're going to get on to the World Series. And the other thing is, when these teams, and the fans have to know this, when they're in the ALCS and the NLCS, I know it sounds crazy, but there's a lot more pressure than a World Series because they will just want to get there. You get to the World Series, right. You kind of exhale, relax, and do your thing. But right now, the pressure, and in a way, that's why the Yankees stinking it up so early, you know, or losing, falling behind by so much, is kind of taking the pressure off their shoulders, and now they can just be who they are. So I think that's what's kind of eased that burden. And they're also going to be, you know, they're also going to see a very different crowd there than they're used to seeing. This is a football mentality down in Texas when I was there. You know, they expect it to be waving those flags and everything. And I think all that's going to play into the Yankees' advantage, because I also think part of the Yankees' problem, to be quite honest, is I don't think they had the kind of rabid fan support at home that they should have had.
Yeah.
I think the Yankees will have a much better – you're going to talk about fans who are really dying to win. And I think it's all going to play into the Yankees' hands, but who's going to win, I don't know.
All right. Hey, you know what? You mentioned before about the Giants-Yankees connection. Don't forget my one of my favorite players growing up, Big Hensley Bam Bam Mullins, is the hitting coach over there. Loved
Absolutely.
Him. Loved him when he was with the Yankees.
You're right. And it's nice to see, because in a lot of ways the Giants approach the game like the Yankees do. And, you know, they play hard. They have a little bit of fun. This team has more fun, because I didn't even get a chance to talk about the rally song that Aubrey Huff has brought to the team. But it's kind of like Giambi was a few years ago. We'll leave it at that.
I thought you said thong. I was kind of waiting. I was waiting for clarification. So
since he started wearing his rally song, I think the team went 20-2 down the stretch. And then the makers of the rally song, after it was written about, sent a bunch to him. And he distributed them to a bunch of the players. And Bochy assures me he will not wear a rally sign.
Is he breathing through his eyelids, too?
Exactly.
Kevin, thank you very much. Hopefully, we'll be talking again in San Francisco for a Yankees-Giants World Series. Maybe that happens. And if it does, I promise you, dinner is on me at the Stinkin' Rose.
Oh, that'd be perfect, because I was going to say that will bring me to 7 more great restaurants out here. And don't forget the Happy Donut Place right across from AT&T Park.
You're absolutely right. And don't forget Ghirardelli Square. We'll go get some chocolate for dessert. Maybe visit a winery. Pick out drapes.
Maybe an Irish coffee over at Buena Vista.
All right, buddy. Thank you very much for coming on. We appreciate your time. As always, you do a tremendous job. That's NYPost_Kernan on Twitter. Thank you very much, buddy.
Okay, guys, take care.
All right, take care.